Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter, we shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Gentlemen, this is the East Anglian's EDL radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. East Anglian's EDL radio show, the official English Defence League's radio station. We have at the moment our co-host of the show is just helping out Vlad with the Skype. So we'll just I'll just hold on for a little while till Tommy sorted out with Vlad for that. But my goodness me! Before I go on. As I say, there's a show that's coming on next week. As we know, next Saturday is the national demonstration for the English Defence League, which will be in Tower Hamlets. We'll talk about this a little bit later. And there is the mayor of Tower Hamlets is trying to take legal action to try to stop us. But we will discuss this a little bit more as the show goes on. I see Sue. Good to see you tonight, Sue, from Mexico. As usual, it's always a pleasure to see you. A staunch supporter of the radio show and that. Thank you so much. And since the chat room's building up very well this evening, that's what I want to do. I want to read out, as you see, if you look down, you'll see a little statement for the opening of the show. I'm going to read it out. I don't do it often, but I think it's only right that we read it out now and again on the air. For people maybe just tuning in, it's live of the show, first time listeners. Anyway, I'll read this out. If freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent we may be led like sheep to the slaughter. That was by George Washington. Welcome to the East Anglian's EDL radio show, the place where we aren't afraid to discuss the issues that the newspapers, TV and radio won't touch. Come and listen to the show that isn't afraid to offend people, that doesn't hide behind a pretense of political correctness. Galloping Sharia, or should I say creeping Sharia, we call it galloping Sharia now, creeping Sharia, Sharia law, Islamism and Islamization. This is the place where you will hear the unpleasant truth and can join in the discussion about the facts, not the polished and anonymous half-truth that the authorities publish to keep you quiet. The East Anglian's EDL radio show is the official program for the English Defence League, so we will find the same honesty. You will find the same honesty and direct approach that you've come to expect from the EDL supporters, approach that you've come to expect from us, excuse me, EDL supporters. This is your platform. This show is your voice. Come and join us on Thursdays, Fridays and Sundays, 8:30 Greenwich Mean Time, 3:30 Eastern Standard Time. Your voice is welcome too. All this
midnight Afghanistan time.
There you go, and welcome back. To, welcome, and I'll just read this out. I'll just carry it through, Tom. There's something that I always look at this, and it's so true. All that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing, and that is, of course, a statement was made by Edmund Burke. Going back a little while now. But it's good to see you tonight. I can see, obviously, dear Vlad is in the
chat.
You've got him sorted out.
I have to apologise to Vlad because I did send him I missed one number out. But just before we bring him in, Jeff, there is something I would like to play. I'm going to call this the David Cameron song. It's only 2 minutes long. But
David Cameron's one embarrassment, I've heard actually Obama is walking around like he's got a ferret rammed down the front of his trousers after what he heard from happened in the UK. So he's been walking around like he's got a ferret down his trousers there, Tom.
Oh dear, but I bet David Cameron sung this song when he got back to 10 Downing Street last night. So you'd like to hear it, Jeff? It'll give you a laugh, I'll tell you that.
Go on, my son, go for it.
Okay, guys, here we go.
I'm so lonely, So lonely, so lonely and sad, real alone. Give no one, just me only, sitting on my little throne. I work very hard and make up great friends, but nobody listens, no one understands. Seems like no one takes me seriously. And so I'm lonely. A little lonely. Poor little me. There's nobody I can relate to. Feel like a bird in a cage. It's kind of scary, but not really, because it's filling my body with rage. I'm the smartest, most clever, most physically fit, but nobody else seems to realize it. When I change the world, maybe they'll notice me. And until then, I'll just be lonely. Yeah, riddle lonely. Poor riddle me. I'm so lonely.
Oh, dear. Oh, it's David Cameron. No, you can't have your war. The people have spoke. No, you'll have to go it by yourself or go and fly your own planes over there. So there you go. We said it, didn't we, last week, that we should never get involved in there. We've got enough fingers in too many pies. We've still got a war. We're still in a war with Afghanistan. We're still over there doing things. So, you know, before you engage in other conflicts around the globe, you'd think, and it's quite obviously the people in the end.
Saying that, Jeff, there is one place he could have military intervention. It's a little thing known as, I don't know, Tower Hamlets. That could do with some military intervention. Go for a vote.
Well,
it'd
be
on
military
that.
Intervention with his UAF lads, wouldn't it? his foot soldiers. It's the only military intervention he's going to get.
Unfortunately, I have to put up with EDL intervention, I'm afraid.
That's right. But anyway, as I say, we've got Vladdy. I was going to say, next week as well, the same day, I've got to make a mention for my dear friend Holger from Holger and Awakens. Hopefully we're going to get a promo email and then we'll upload it into the studio. Holger's on the 7th of September, which is the same day as the Tower Hamlets, when the EDL goes into Tower Hamlets. The same day, or the same evening, should I say, Holger will have his Holger Awakens, a special, you know, for the 9/11 anniversary. And something, anybody's not listened to Holger Awakens, last year we did something, a lot of the radio hosts got together. I don't know if it was about then, Tom, when we all different hosts, we'd done our shows and we read out the names of the people that lost their lives, and it was a very moving moment for us all. And this was a marathon. It was been about 24 hour marathon of what we did. So it was different, something that Blog Talk Radio has never done, especially the radio hosts, to get everybody together to do it, and it was pretty good. So Holt is going to have a special next Saturday. So once we receive the email, we'll upload it into the studio, Holger, and we'll plug it for you, sir. Isn't that right, Tom?
Oh, yes.
Right.
Oh, well.
So, so with that, I've got to welcome everybody tonight. What have we got in the chat room? Busy. Oh, my goodness me. I just clicked on there, and my goodness me, it's building up very nicely. Welcome, everybody. Good to see you all in the... I couldn't do it last night, and I had to rely on Tom. Some of the guests there, and I know you was very frustrated because you couldn't write in the chat box, but the Blog Talk Radio technicians managed to sort out that problem. Hopefully, that'll be sort of in the past now, so and we move forward. So I'm sorry if it inconvenienced anybody. It was very inconvenient for myself. I didn't sit. I opened the chat, and all I had was a blank chat box. It was that's all I had all the evening. But as I say, it's been rectified, that problem. We're going to get little problems like that now and again. But it's something we just we've just got to learn to live with, haven't we, Tom?
We've got it back now, guys. So chat amongst yourselves, and there will be a uniform inspection tonight, just so you don't start getting too comfortable.
Okay, with that, Vlad, seeing how you're all hooked up with the Skype now, brother, good to see you, and we're going to bring you in now. Vlad Zepes, welcome to the show, the East Anglian Zeta Radio. Go ahead, brother.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. Boy, it's not like there's any shortage of stuff to go over, though, is there? Like, we don't get a break, you know? We don't get a break. It's not like there's going to be a week in the foreseeable future where we're going to say nothing really terrible that Islam is responsible for happened this week, so I guess we can all go about our lives. It's just not going to happen. It's just...
No.
The good news is really that, you know, I heard from one of my friends who's a serious reporter from Egypt and on the Egyptian scene, who said that it's at the point now where if Muslim Brotherhood people appear on the streets anywhere in Cairo or the major cities, other people just come up and beat them. It shows how much more enlightened that the Egyptian public is than, say, the Canadian, British, or American, I would say. Because they just had it.
I think so. They got their hands firmly on the pulse there, and they didn't want to be ruled by the Muslim Brotherhood. It's something that they'd fought hard and long for many years, because it raised its ugly head a few times, and it was crushed. It was quite vividly crushed, wasn't it, before? And the same thing has happened, because they gained the power, but once the people, they thought, oh, let's see what happens, and of course... It was far too extreme for the people of Egypt that they wasn't going to accept that, and it's quite obvious that, and of course with the help of the military, overthrew them, or deposed, is the word deposed, is it? The word deposed?
Yes.
Yeah, so, and their common sense, that's where you see common sense does prevail, because it really, I know it irked Obama, and I know it irked Cameron, because they thought, well, we get involved with the Muslim Brotherhood, we'll have a few things. But it didn't work out that way. So this moment in time, I think, as I said at the beginning of the show, Vlad, today, after what happened in the Assa Commons with David Cameron basically having to throw up the backside about military intervention in Syria, as I said at the beginning, Obama walking around today like he's got to throw it down, push down the front of his trousers.
Well, let's act on the assumption that MI5 or MI6, whichever it is, and the NSA, and, you know, for all I know, the RCMP, the CSE, all listen in on this show to find out whatever for whatever possible reason that they might. That I have something I'd like to say directly to them. In terms of Syria and possible strategies to Syria, I think what they should do is take a few million, probably wouldn't even be that expensive, maybe 10 million tops, right? And they should encourage all of the jihadis in England and in the United States and in Canada and Scandinavia. This may actually be happening in Scandinavia and in Holland and Western Europe in general. And we should get them tickets to go ahead and face Assad's meat grinder. I mean, you know, we keep seeing video and we keep reading news reports horrified about, oh, yes, all these Danish guys, all these Danish jihadis went to Syria and they're fighting the jihad there. Like it's a bad thing. I mean, frankly, you think about it, what does this really mean? Well, I'm going to speak now to in a way that would make sense to Canadians. I'm sure you guys can come up with a similar example. But, I mean, it's almost like if we had a couple of hundred jihadis trying to take over Waterloo, which is like a tiny city, I don't know, 2 hours outside of Toronto. You know what I mean? Like maybe now and again a few of them make it to a suburb. But basically it's such a small problem for Assad, as far as I can tell anyway. And I'm not a geopolitical expert, but it sure looks to me like it's almost funny. I mean, it's a great way to get rid of thousands of these jihadis. Like, let's get all the ones who want to go fight jihad. Now, to the credit of some of the journalists, some of the Danish journalists and stuff that I've read, the real issue that they raise is that these guys will be coming back weaponized. They'll be, battle-hardened, and they'll know how to work all these weapons, and they'll know how to do stuff, and they'll bring the jihad back to Europe. Yeah, well, don't let them, Like, try to let Assad's guys know where they are. I think the idea of sending all of these really devout classical Muslims into the meat grinder in Syria is a great idea. And I think that would be a good use of tax dollars, because I'm willing to bet that whatever it costs to fly them over there is a lot cheaper than what it costs us here to keep them going every month.
Very good.
If I could have a message to MI6, it'd probably be this. Ah, Mr. Bond, welcome to my studio. But this pleasure will be mine.
Very good, Tom. But as I say, I was speaking to Tom. We had a chat on the phone earlier. And it did seem like, when you talk about prime ministers of our times and that. What we have with the Cameron legacy will be he's been the only prime minister to cut the armed forces when we've been in a war scenario. And he's the only prime minister in living history that's who's called calls the members of parliament together and get voted down over it. The whole thing gets thrown out.
Is that tantamount to a no confidence?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was leading to. No confidence in him as a person, and then in him for what he was trying to do. His Cameron's probably went into his cabinet and said, "I wanted my war. I wanted my war." I mean, Blair had one, Major had one. They've all had one. I haven't had one. You can imagine him really sulking over it. I wanted my war, and they turned me down.
Could you imagine him on the Westminster playground? I want my war. I want my war.
Well, I've heard some pretty interesting opinions about the particular psychopathology behind his motives, but I mean, I think it may be simpler. But for the benefit of American listeners, I think it's probably worth explaining how this works, both in Canada and in the UK. The way our parliamentary system works is there are certain specific issues that are really major ones, ones that are military, and ones like the budget, for instance. And if the prime minister comes in to the House, even if he has a majority, but if he tries to pass a budget and that budget is voted down by a majority of the members of parliament in the House of Commons, in parliament, typically that means the government falls and there has to be a new election. It's called a vote of no confidence. And I believe certainly a budget vote is basically the equivalent of a no confidence. I mean, government can choose to hold a vote of no confidence, but I think if a budget gets voted down, it's automatic. I'm not quite sure, but it's basically the same. So on this issue where he tries to get approval to go ahead and launch a war. Now, of course, the real issue is who are you going to fight and why? Here's the thing about this whole Libyan thing that's got me confused. There are three issues about these use of chemical weapons. There's who, what, and why. Okay?
Yeah.
So to me, what's more important when you're talking about killing people usually is who and why, and not how. I missed the how earlier, right? So we know how it was chemical weapons. we don't quite know who used them, although we do know who died, and it seemed to be kind of a mix. It's hard to tell by the victims, right? But I guess what I'm trying to say is that the fact that the jihadis have been going to Syria and killing whole villages of Christians because they were Christian is a considerably more serious crime than the use of the type of weapon they used. Had they used chemical weapons, would Obama and, you know, would the UK be in there trying to do something about it? I don't think so. In other words, it's they've decided that the how is more important than the who and the why, and I think that's insane. I mean, the Germans used gas as one method of mass extermination of German civilians who happened to be Jewish, right? As well as a number of other groups that were unpopular, as well as gays and as well as gypsies and so on, right? So, but the reason that the Germans and that the Nazis were demonized and vilified historically by most of us, at least, wasn't because they used gas. It was because of who they killed and why they killed those groups. Right?
Yeah.
It was this group was no threat, blah, 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 right? So that's the issue. It's the who was killed and why they were killed, not the how. Now, I'm not entirely stupid. I get why some governments have made the WMD issue serious, because the gas doesn't discriminate. But if we're going to take that argument, then you got to ask yourself, why would Assad use a chemical weapon at the mercy of the wind in a suburb of the same town he lives in, knowing that it's just as likely that the wind could change and kill him and his friends and his family and his government as it is the people who, you know, where the rockets actually landed. So if that makes you suspicious as to whether it was him or not. But even if he was that stupid, and I'm pretty confident he's not, again, so I can see that being a problem. Okay, so using weapons that don't discriminate. But I still think the issue of who is being killed and why they're being killed is the central one. And the fact that these governments have not acted when these jihadis, these Muslims, and by the way, that means this is not a civil war. Today I read that 7 out of 10 brigades or 7 out of 10, you know, groups of people that are in fighting in Syria are not from Syria. They're foreign jihadis. They're not the FSA, right? So this makes it not a civil war, but a war of conquest by, you know, Muslim Brotherhood and by Al-Qaeda, whoever have you, that are in there to create a caliphate for Sunni Islam, right? So this is not a civil war. So if we're going to go in there, who are we going to fight, and why exactly are we going to fight them? And I think, like, even Obama, who's now been caught with his ferret out, trying to, you know, blustering that he's going to go in and do something. Like, what's he going to do? I don't think this has been very well thought out. You know, what if he does take down the Assad regime? Is he going to get something better? Is he just stupid and uneducated?
He's put himself, Vlad, my way of thinking. I think, was it last year or year before, that he said if any chemicals, weapons are used, anything like that, that's a red line. And if they cross over that, then...
they've been used a couple of times already, though. They've been used... They were used in May, and it was totally proven in May that they were used by the Al-Qaeda guys. It was totally an absolute... And then there was nothing. There was radio silence. After it was, you know, remember the video with the rabbit and the Al-Qaeda guy saying, look what we can do to this rabbit or something? And they gassed it, and they showed the big stockpile of all the parts you need to make chemical weapons, and it was Al-Qaeda that was doing it and that had them? So
I've been in the same thinking as you, where they're trying to slay it all off on the Assad regime. I would like to say that you've got Islamists out there that would use any means to better their cause, the caliphate. And so all the evidence which they say they're gathering, the direction, I think Kerry was saying today that there was a time that these things were fired over, the rockets, whatever. But is it just hearsay or so, or is it, or what? This is the thing. That's why it's so unsure. When you get involved which it was classed as a Syrian civil war. I mean, but as we know, it's basically it's the Islamists against the people that don't want to be a part of that Al Qaeda sort of a system or Muslim Brotherhood hands on things, which are fighting tooth and nail to protect. Of course, and the Americans and the British really, really want to get involved with it, and I do not understand why. Okay, chemicals, and it was outlawed in 1924. There was a treaty drawn up, wasn't there, Vlad? Probably that was 1924. That, you know, in any future conflicts, this is totally outlawed, and there will be crimes against humanity if people were known to use it, you know. And that was the case up to, you know, quite a while ago. But the only people that hadn't actually signed up to that treaty, I think, was the Syrians. Well, a few others, but I'm thinking that the Syrians didn't sign up to that as such.
What we need to remember, guys, is that the belligerent factions in every country, and history's taught us this many times, is they will make them look like the victims. Like, think about, why did Hitler... We all know why Hitler invaded Poland, but he got German soldiers to dress up like Polish soldiers and to attack a German barracks in just along the border. So then Hitler said,
yeah,
right,
I'm getting your drift on what you... Yeah,
yeah.
To make it
and
look
then,
that way.
Yeah, to make
but
them look like the victims.
But I think it's all that, isn't it? Yeah.
And obviously when Stalin invaded Finland, because he wanted part of the Finnish territory and the Finnish government said no, he got NKVD soldiers to fire artillery on his soldiers, so when that Russian commander said, right, they're firing on us, Stalin said, right, go, invade the country. It's so they can try and justify what they've done. But like you said, Vlad, would Assad risk his own life on a chemical attack? Because Syria's only a very small country.
Well, I can't see. I just can't. It was just a suburb in this capital city. Like it just seems highly unlikely. I mean, this is a weapon that kills everybody who breathes it, or you know, or makes them wish they were dead. And it's completely subject to the whims of the wind. And I personally do not trust Canada, Environment Canada, enough. Like Environment Canada's weather reports, I don't trust it enough to launch a chemical weapon at the building next door to me. I can't imagine that Syria has an environmental. Has a weather office that's considerably superior enough to Canada's that they would say, yeah, the wind's going to blow this way for exactly 4 hours and 22 minutes. By then, the weapon will be neutralized. No, I don't think so. There's something really wrong with this. But again, I think the who and the why is more important than the how. You see?
Yeah,
it's
I
just,
agree.
It's just,
I mean, what we're doing is just it's speculation and probably, you know, there's more information out there. Hopefully more things come out of exactly what did go on. It's always horrible when you see the horrific, you know, these little kiddies all lined up and, you know, the pictures, which is, you sow the picture in your soul, doesn't it, when you see little children being caught up in this horrific civil war that's going on. Who's ever exploded these horrific, horrible weapons. It's, as you say, it's indiscriminate, you know, and indiscriminate. But at the same time, you could imagine, the opposition is as the people in opposition to the Azid regime. A lot of these, as we said, that are Al Qaeda, and Al Qaeda wouldn't think twice if they could get these couple of chemical weapons and know how to use it, how to charge it up, and how to use it. I would say that they would use that to better their cause. They would sacrifice the people. They would sacrifice their own children to better the cause. It's been known time and time again how many times that their kids put their strap bombs on children's backs and send them off to blow themselves up. So, no, I wouldn't put it past them at all that it was it was the opposition to the Azad regime. But then again, I'm purely speculating as... I've got no true facts in front of me, but it's just looking out, looking in, looking at the situation. But at the same time, you know that Cameron wanted his war. Well, he's not having it, you know. He's going to do a bit robust. He said it's going to be something robustly done. So that's probably talking hard again, but he's not, you know, he can't just go in there willy-nilly because, say, 75% of the British public didn't want it. 75%. That's an overwhelming amount of people was going against what Cameron wanted. None of us excuses the... no one likes war, let's be honest. No one likes war, but when it becomes a dirty type of war, chemicals, things like that, what can we say about that? It's just, it's against humanity. As you say, it's indiscriminate who it kills. Of course, there has to be, at the end of it, there's got to be like Nuremberg trials that go on for these people that endeavour to use these type of weapons. Would you not agree, Vlad, on that? At the end, someone's going to...
The problem is, it's okay. The problem is, as I see it, if you go back and read the Geneva Convention, for which is great, by a great document, great thing, right? It's not what most people popularly think who don't read it. the Geneva Convention is a really good document that is not intended to bias in favor of one side or another of an armed conflict. The idea is that if two civilized groups resort to armed conflict, that if they both apply these sets of rules to the best possible extent that they can, that you'll end up resolving your conflict through, you know, through military means, but with the least possible damage, expense, and civilian deaths, which is what presumably what everybody wants. But the Geneva Convention doesn't say that if one side completely abandons it, that the other side must continue to use these aspects of the Geneva Convention, even though it gives them a tremendous military and tactical disadvantage. It doesn't say that. For example, the minute you have combatants that are not in uniform, all bets are off, which is like, for instance, when Israel has to take on the and I use the word specifically terrorists, and I don't use that. You might notice it's the first time I've ever used that word when I've ever been on this show.
That's but, true. It's the first time I've ever heard you use that.
Yeah, and there's a reason. There's a reason, because I find it mostly is used as a rhetorical device to make you feel a certain way, but it doesn't have much actual semantic value. But I mean it as... I mean it in a very operational sense. You got guys who are not in uniform, that blend in with the civilian population, that use civilians as a cover for their attacks, and that their attacks are on the softest possible targets, like their kindergartens and hospitals and non-military, non-strategic, non-military targets, right? So yes, non-strategic targets. So I'm saying that these guys are terrorists, and then when Israel responds, they actually still manage to not just adhere to the Geneva, but even much more, even with greater degrees of the spirit of the Geneva Convention than the convention even calls for. But in fact, the convention doesn't call for it at all when you're being attacked by people who are not in uniform. Just to give you one example, I mean, I just bring that up as one example. You look at most of these countries and the kinds of conflicts that they have, they're so far away from this kind of thinking. There's it's a long way from Damascus to Geneva, right? It's a very long way, although I'm sure by now Geneva's infested by jihadis, so maybe it's closer than it used to be. But the point is that when you start talking about Nuremberg trials and you start talking about these things, you're assuming that layers and layers of civilized thought apply where it just doesn't, you know? Like in Afghanistan, for instance, you look
at... Yeah, I understand that.
I'm sure we all have acquaintances to friends that have fought in Afghanistan, yeah? And the stories that they'll tell you, if you can get them, you know, if you can get them comfortable enough to tell you what their opinions and thoughts and what some of the stuff they observed was, you're talking about a kind of savagery that was shocking and horrifying from a day-to-day basis, not even in conflict, but just in general day-to-day lifestyle of some of these guys, right? The way they think, the way they approach problems, it's all about kidnapping and torture, rape and murder, as if it's just absolutely, it's day-to-day commonplace. There's no civilization to preserve, at least with Germany, after we crushed it to rubble. It was like one block where the bunker was at the end of the war. The basic culture of the people allowed it to become Europe's number one economic power in a couple of, like in less than what, a decade or whatever, right?
It's
like
amazing, Germany, isn't it? When you look
it's
back,
absolutely
and
stunning. And Japan, people have no, people think about Hiroshima and Nagasaki like it was a big deal. I mean, yeah, they were nuked, but guess what?
those 7 hours after, I think it was Hiroshima, was nuked, the trains were running again. 7 hours, okay?
Yeah, like, it's amazing.
The point is that the Japanese and the German culture were essentially one of mutual cooperation, civilization, right? They weren't, like, thinking in terms of the way the Islamic mindset works, right? So, you know, all of this is to say there's an awful lot of work that has to go on before a Nuremberg trial. You have to look at, like, you know, in terms of how do you act, like, again, who do you... If Obama's going to go in, he knows it's going to have to be showboating. It's going to be filibustering. He's going to have to go in there and, what, bomb a couple of government buildings, but not do so much that he's actually going to cause Assad's downfall? Because if he does, he'll get another al-Qaeda state. And by the way, he's now like the second most unpopular man in Egypt, right? Number one would be Morsi. Right, as I mentioned earlier, it's at the point now where Muslim Brotherhood guys are just being randomly beaten in the street if they show support, if they're on, you know what I mean? So, but the
one of their main ones, Vlad, I don't know if you know, but one of their main ones, like second in command of them, is actually in the UK now. UK has given asylum. Could you believe this? You know, that we got one of their Muslim Brotherhood sitting in the UK. But no, I mean to say, you're probably thinking like me and probably Tom, not surprised whatsoever, especially with what we've seen over the years and then trying to get rid of them, is another thing, isn't it? So,
well, it's a nice change from France, right? Because typically these guys were going to France for a long time. It's interesting now that they're going to the UK. I wonder why.
Yeah.
I guess it's more Sharia friendly, right? I guess, which is a terrifying thought.
I think you're right there, Vlad. This is reason why we the English Defence League are here. You know, this is, it's wrong. You know, this United Kingdom, this isn't some cesspit Sharia country. Well, it was, you know, but it's slowly but surely different parts is you know, it's mirroring the same as like these Middle Eastern, some of these cesspits you see out there. Once they colonise and they put their roots down, how you see value your properties dropped rock bottom. No wonder they can buy them up left, right, and centre simply because no one else wants to live there. Once they've made their presence known, and once they start to move more people in, we see, just look around the UK. Look where Tom's, he's up close and personal. He's seen it gradually taking shape. 16, how many mosques you got there, Tom? 8, 9, 10, how many mosques you got? You got loads, haven't you?
Oh, too many to count, but I think my cat just agreed with you, Jeff, because she just nodded her head.
Well, there you go. even cats and dogs, they got common sense, they know what's right. But,
well,
but as I say, like in Luton, there's 19 mosques. Well, 19, I think it was a last count.
Yeah. Well, they're planning another 19, aren't they? But I was just going to say to Vlad, Jeff's got a fear of spiders, guys, but I tell him not to announce it on the...
Don't tell all our listeners. They'll be sending spiders as presents.
Because the last thing we need is the UAF holding up a banner saying, oppose the EDL's racism, fascism, Islamophobia and arachnophobia.
Yeah, I'm an arachnophobe. Hear that, Vlad.
Yes, I sure did. Yeah, and don't know whether or not that's going to be a problem or not, but I get the point.
Well, I do not think people are like, they'll find anything.
Anyway, about the mosque thing, though, have you guys seen the footage that they released, the CCTV footage of the fellows who tried to burn that mosque with the foam?
Yeah, I did see that.
What'd you think?
No, I must admit, I haven't seen that, Vlad.
Yeah, they look suspiciously. They look a little Middle Eastern to me. You know, it's hard to tell.
Really? Well, I'm shocked. Shocked. Well,
shocked. Shocked. Can't imagine why they would do that. Yeah, just can't imagine.
No. But as I say, in the UK at the moment, there is the different sections of them, the Shiites and the Sunnis, which have been sort of. There has been some attacks against each other. I think this is one of the London, I think, what's his name? Anal Chowdhury and his merry mob. was having one a demonstration, and there was a group up the road that was in opposition to them, so they're Sunni Shiites, and they went to it. So they had a go at each other, and the opposition, the people who was opposed to anal child rearing his married mob.
They were Shia,
I think
right?
It was
Shia.
Those who was arrested. I think a couple of them ended up getting up, but they was arrested.
Oh,
for it.
Are you talking about when they were charging up the street and they attacked that shop and they had sent out a couple of riot vans, and then they went for Baroness Vazi, didn't they, while the police was arresting them?
What I do know is there was a Chowdhury and a bunch of his goons were doing some ridiculous protest about some foreign policy thing somewhere that probably had nothing to do with England. And then a bunch of Shias showed up. It was about Syria, I think it was. And then a bunch
that's
of Shias
right,
showed up.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
because, of
it.
Course, this conflict is internecine in a way, right? Because you have Iran and the Shia regime backing the Alawite regime, which is a kind of form flavor of Shia, the Alawite regime of Assad. And then you've got all these foreign jihadis that are all Sunnis that are trying to come in and create a Sunni caliphate, right? So, of course, in microcosm, the same thing happened in the streets of London, where all these Shias saw Chowdhury's guys making up stuff and protesting in favor of these jihadis, and so they attacked them, and it was like, you know, it's like, you know, Monty Python, where are you, you know?
I agree. I got to admit, Vlad, I did chuckle. So, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I shouldn't do, but when I see that, when I heard that it was Anil Chowdhury's mob and another the Sunnis and Shiites kicking off, I did find it rather amusing. I thought, well, there you go. This is what happens. It just goes to show. One thing it does point out, Vlad, you know, when they say Islam is a religion of peace, and as we know, and if you look into in the depth of it like we've done, most of us that know about Islam, the only peace will be when any other religions and that is not around and it's only Islam that is left. Well, it just goes to show you that will not be the case. There will never be peace in Islam, ladies and gentlemen, because you'll always have the Sunnis protesting against the Shiites and killing each other, blowing each other's mosques up. It's the way it's always been, and it's the way it would all stay, as far as I know. There will never, ever be peace in the world.
Let me put it this way. Ain't gonna fall on no child molester, sex offender, prophet pretender. I ain't gonna fall on no child molester. Islam's not for me.
Hey, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Well, can you imagine me going pretty got talent with that, eh?
So, but Jeff, you know, even let's just say, sake of argument, that in one fell swoop that the Sunnis wipe out all the Shias, or vice versa, right? There's still the much more important than the internecine conflict in terms of peace within Islam. Much more important is that Islam was set up in such a way, basically you've got this one old psycho perv that created this, made up a bunch of stuff to try to get sexually frustrated teenage men to fight for his glorification and his wealth, right? I mean, if you read the Quran, it's so obvious. Like, you're reading it, it's like, wow, I can't believe these kids fell for it. Like, the whole time you're reading it, right, it's just, it's so obvious that that's what it is. So, as a concept, it was set up in such a way.
I would say the words was seducing them, because he said, well, if we do this, you can have part of the booty and the women. You can imagine him saying this to these people. So,
like, if you're killed,
I think
you get all the women you want, and if you're not killed, you can get whatever women your white hand may possess that you don't have to kick up to the caliph, which is me, right? So the whole thing's like a giant mafia. But the point I'm trying to make is he created a system where the only guaranteed way to paradise is to fight in the way and die in the way of promoting the religion that he made up, right? So that being the case, even if there was only Sunnis or only Shias, they would have to make up an enemy. And what would that enemy be? Anybody they thought wasn't religious enough, because there's this thing called Hijra, which is each community has to then go on this journey where they increase their degree of devotion and religiosity to Islam. Or it would be like if there's some weird variant of any of them see it, that they have to be killed. So the point is that, you know, is your neighbor faking it, right? Maybe your neighbor and you are equally religious and you're both wearing Paki pajamas and the little hat and you've got the big, you know, urinated beards and so on. And but you think, but the guy next to you did this. I saw him do this thing, or I saw him make this symbol, or I saw him reading this book, so I know he can't be really, truly, genuinely devoted. And so I get to, you know, if I fight that guy, then I've got my shot at paradise. So it's not just about internecine warfare. Because when do you stop fighting for Allah, right? When the only guaranteed way to get yourself, you know, into the highest heaven with all the chicks, whatever, all that nonsense, right? And the wine and the couches, all that craziness.
It's to mark yourself for the cause, isn't it?
It is. And so even if the whole world does get it and becomes Islamic and blah, 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 they're simply, what are people going to do? How are they going to make it to paradise if there's no one left to fight? So they'll have to invent reasons, and it'll be about people who aren't religious enough or who you think were faking it. And since there's no rational system of justice, there's no rational, you know, rules of evidence. My favorite, you know, I have to keep going back to this. Before I really knew much about this, right, way before 9/11, and, you know, was listening to this news story about these two 14-year-old Pakistani kids that were up on charges of blasphemy in Pakistan. And I followed that with great interest because I thought, well, I have a feeling that this is significant, you know, a feeling this is going to matter. So I followed it, and what was interesting about it was that these kids had been alleged to have thrown a note with blasphemous writings mocking Islam or Allah or Muhammad or something on a piece of paper into a mosque. That was the charge. For which, by the way, they were on trial in a death penalty, which is no shock to anybody anymore, but it was at the time. No one really believed it, right? Like aliens have landed and kids are on trial for their life or blasphemy. Now, the part of this whole story that really got to me was that the judge wasn't allowed to look at the piece of paper, because in Islam, the judge, who's like probably a mujahideen, right, because that's what they mean by scholar, is the judge of the Sharia court, isn't allowed to look at anything blasphemous. Okay, so he couldn't look at the evidence. So it was brought to him like in a box. So this piece of paper was in a box. So they said, yeah, these kids threw this piece of paper that you can't see into a mosque. Okay, guilty. Put them on death row. Now, if I remember right, and this is quite a while, this would be like the 80s, maybe the 90s. If I remember right, I think there was such a huge public outcry that they were at least taken off death row. I don't know if they're still in prison or not. They'd be like 40 by now. But, I mean, the point is that that's the kind of it's the kind of logic that's used with Islamic law. So there's never going to be any kind of peace. Truth never matters. In fact, if truth gets in the way of an Islamic agenda, then truth itself becomes illegal. A lawyer friend of mine recently said, as far as I know, truth is still an absolute defense. And I have to say to him, it depends where.
You know what? I was nodding my head. I have a feeling you're going to say that, and I would agree. It depends where, in the end, where you live and that, where you reside, the parts of the world. But it's just that it's a nightmarish scenario with, you know, countries, Islamic countries, who, you know, fully implicates Sharia law, as we've seen in some of these that some of these people that live in our country want to bring these laws and make them the common law of this country and your country and many others out there. It could, you know, it's now, I mean, people like myself, many others, refuse to accept anything to do with this horrible cult, like this ideology called Islam, because we know all the implications. It just drags us back to the 7th century, 6th century, just dragging us backwards. If people embrace this horrible cult, it's just, I don't know how long before they'd outlaw television, things like that. If that was the case, I mean, I'd be very surprised, you know, if that was the case, the class, all these things, going down the pub and having a drink, things like that, a thing of the past. Things like that, all the freedoms that people, you know, take for granted, would be something in the far distant past, wouldn't it, if they had their way? But it's not going to happen because people will fight it too for now, Vlad. I think most of us know that, you know, the way things look at the moment, it does look, sometimes you feel, But in the end, as we see with what we saw in the House of Commons with David Cameron, felt he swayed over his side of the government and it went against them. But this is the will of the people in the end. The will of the people say, enough, we're not having this. And once people stand up, you know, we're not having these Sharia. Oh, you can see in the not too distant future some of these Sharia courts and things like that closing down, simply shut them up. But it will happen, but it's going to take, you know, the will of politicians of the time. Whereas we've got at the moment are very weak. Does mean, you know, sort of a bit of a shake-up in the political system. I think that goes around, you know, on a global basis, because I think a lot of the politicians around the world with political correctness have been hammered over the years. So it does need a strong will of resolve in the end to, put things right. But I was going to say, Vlad and Tom, I was wondering, we need to go for a quick break. We haven't. We just gone right the way through the show. Then we go at the top of the hour, don't we? But we've gone almost an hour before a break, and I need to do what I normally do, Tom.
Yeah,
so I was wondering if
I mean, I've just got a song request on me Twitter now. And I was just about to get that sorted out. Then you just caught me on the hop there.
I was going to say, because I need to dial back in anyway, Tom, so we just need to take a little break. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're just talking about things in general, the different aspects of Islam, and what we got coming up next week, which is about 9 days away. Was it 8 days? No, 8 days away now, wasn't it, Tom?
Eight days.
8 days, and we're counting down. That's what you could... yes, which you could play tonight, so I'm going to find it, the final countdown. I think we should have as we're getting closer to Tom Hamlitz and also to Holger, because he's got a great show next week, and I'm going to plug his show, Holger, and once we get the things, we'll put it in the studio as well. So there you go, Tom. So,
I've got it.
You've got it. So, Vlad, do you want to go and get yourself a cup of tea there?
That's a fine plan. I will speak to you fellows in 5 minutes.
Okay, thanks, Vlad. See you soon, guys.
All right, here we go, guys.
Thank you.
there you go, the final countdown.
I got to say, if you guys have ever heard the show, have ever watched the show Arrested Development, I just can't listen to that song without seeing the magician guy. Anyway, it's a really, if you haven't seen it,
I know we play it because, as I say, we, you know, we come to, you know, a national demonstration next week, so, you know, we thought we'd throw it in there. So, you get a picture in your mind sometimes when you hear a bit of music, don't you? But welcome back anyway. I hope you've got your cup of tea or your refreshment there and some of you, Tom. I was going to say,
do you want me to do roll call since we've got such a busy chat room?
Well, what I was going to do, I've got a little story that it's just we got the mayor of Tower Hamlets wanting to take legal. I was going to say, before we do the roll call, ladies and gentlemen, we've got the mayor. It's a legal threat by Tower Hamlets mayor in a bid to ban planned EDL march. It was written in the advertiser, I think it was called. Anyway, it shows that legal action has been threatened in a bid to challenge the Metropolitan Police's failure to ban, and I hate this word, guys, but it's how it's been wrote, a far-right group, the English Defence League, EDL, from marching through the East London that weekend. This is what I mean. This is where we need to take these people to court by calling us far-right, and that is it really irks me. You know, it irks you, Tom, and most of us do when that. marching in London next weekend. Tower Hamlets Mayor Lufar Rahman's office tonight confirmed in a last-ditch attempt to stop the march from going ahead as planned next Saturday, September the 7th. Mayor Lufar Rahman said, "I'm deeply disappointed that the police and the Home Secretary have failed to act despite my formally requesting them to do so." Clearly, they are not on the same page, as the scores of prominent national and local figures who join me in calling for a ban. I call upon them to see sense, but in the absence of an adequate response, I intend to take this matter to the High Court. Was it Sharia High Court? I don't know. Anyway, earlier this month, dozens of signatories backed a letter to Home Secretary Theresa May to ban the planned protest. Scotland Yard confirmed earlier today that the Met was in negotiations with EDL organisers and opposition groups over the planned march. But tonight's revelation indicate that those negotiations have broken down. With sources at the town hall saying it was looking increasingly likely that the march would be given the go-ahead. Police said earlier a decision on whether to apply to the Home Secretary to ban the event is not likely to be reached until early next week. Just bear with me while I go down the page, guys. Next week, a police application is necessary in order for Theresa May to step in. Even if a ban is enforced, EDL leader Tommy Robinson, it goes on to say he's other name Stephen Yaxley. Well, that pisses me off why they say his full name like that. Said on social networking site Twitter that members of the group would still come to the borough next weekend. In a series of tweets directed at Tower Hamlets Mayor Lufar Rahman, he wrote, "We are coming down your road. Even if Theresa May bans our march, we are still coming. 65% of the community wants us there," he added. And anti-fascist campaigners have also pledged to turn out in large numbers next weekend in a counter-demonstration against the EDL. So there you go. It's just a story that I thought, as we're coming very close to the demonstration next week, that I should read out to our listeners on the show this evening. And
actually, I'm surprised. I'm, su- I'm surprised that the mayor has not tried to change the name of the area even to like Tower Goatlets or Tower Lamlets. I'm surprised he's letting Tower Hamlets stand.
Or just Silent Hill.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, I nearly fell off my seat laughing in some. But it's true, though. I mean, there's so much corruption running right through Tower Hamlets. I mean, it's been spoke about before many times. Quite a few of them involved. He's a very despicable person as well, this mayor, isn't he? He's got his fingers in. There's been lots of money been filtering through his fingers going to these despicable organisations like Hamas, Hezbollah, and things like that. Siphon through the little networks that they use, isn't that Vlad and Tom?
Just to give you all a bit of warning, you better get your cats out the room because Cat Stranglers has showed up in our little studio.
What?
Cat Stranglers here. He's just
welcome, Cat Stranglers. Of course, it's Mr. Tim Burton, dear friend of ours. Who did great. I don't think if you listen to when Tim was on the show last time, Vlad, if you listen to the archives, it was really interesting. Really interesting show that night as well. So maybe you want to call in, Tim. That'd be nice, wouldn't it, guys? So there you go.
Six men just jailed. This just in: 6 men in Leicester. They call it child prostitution. Again, that bugs me. It's child sex slavery. There really isn't much to do with prostitution because these kids didn't sign up for that. But
I love your accent then, Leicester.
I don't know how to say that. How would you
Leicester.
Say it?
Leicester.
Okay, good. I didn't say Leicester.
Love the way you said it, though.
I took a stab. I just took a stab at that. So, Leicester. 6 men were just jailed in, your classic. And the picture's on the BBC website. I'll paste a link in the chat room. It's just extraordinary, right? It's just never-ending stream. It's such a huge number of Muslim men that are turning British non-Muslim children into sex slaves. When
it's the jihad,
are people going to
Vlad?
The question is, when will people realize this isn't crime? This is policy. It's politics. It's really important that people get that. You know what I mean? It's really, really critical.
It's the whole
important.
Ideology, isn't it, Vlad? It's the way it's worked out.
Yes.
This is a part of their whole part of their ideology. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're saying now. That this is a part of their ideology. It's to do that. Follow their so-called prophet. To emanate their prophet. This is what... you say to a Muslim, I've had these conversations with a Muslim before. I'm having a bit of a debate, and I'll say, when I'm feeling a bit, I want to get to this person. I'll say, well, don't you as Muslims like to emulate, live your life on a daily basis as your prophet did? And there's not many of them that says no. They all will say, yes, I do. And then we can then go into, well, then so that you believe in, the paedophilia, this, that, and the other, with leaving you young children and, things like that. You can really get into them because they open the door for you. They allow you to really go in there if you want to go to the throat. Well, there's something to go for.
The whole teaching is so insane. I was actually going through a couple of lectures by this one imam near Toronto who's recently gotten himself in some hot water by talking about how stoning is actually good for the person being stoned if they're a believer. Like if you're a Muslim and you're caught for adultery or for homosexuality, that being stoned is good for you because although it kills you, it purifies you and therefore somehow is good for you in some way I completely didn't get. Anyway, there's been lots of media over that. And so I went and watched a bunch of his other lectures to see what he had to say. Most of them were the kind of banal nonsense you expect from any sort of, mildly unintelligent supernaturalist who's found a way to have authority in life by claiming to be the voice of the divine, right? Not that uncommon, really, in any religion, to be perfectly blunt. But this particular guy gave a lecture on how all the scripture shows that Muhammad was the perfect person and he was superior because he could not read. And he gave a whole explanation for why being illiterate is actually a great thing, right? It was why it's better to be illiterate, because it shows that all that stuff must have come from heaven, and he could not have gotten it from a book, which of course it's laughably illogical and laughably, you know, whatever. It's just stupid. But the thing that I thought when I was watching this, I thought, well, then no one should ever read the Quran, because really, you should have it recited to you. If Mohammed's the perfect person and you should follow that example, then no one should be literate, right? So that means no one should be reading the Quran, because the Quran's a book, and reading it, it's like Mohammed didn't read it. It was recited to him, so you should really just find some kufar, I guess, or wait for an angel. Get them to read
to you. I like that, Vlad. I like your food of thought. I was wondering, I know he hasn't got his hand up there, but I was wondering, just to bring Tim Catchstrangler in on the chat this evening, what do you reckon, Tom? Do you think
Tim you can do, but what time do you want me to do the roll call? Because I don't want
we'll do
people
it round
to
about
get scared
10 o'clock.
And leave. All right, then, mate.
Yeah. No, we'll do it round about 10, Tom. Okay, bro?
Yeah, okay. No problem. But, yeah, that's fine. Oh, sorry, I'm all over the place because me cats walk all over me bloody desk. Get off, Molly. Sorry.
I get it, Millie. Is that her name, Millie?
Molly.
Molly. Oh,
I've got my Quran here trying to get the verse I violated about Aisha, but she keeps clawing at it, so I keep losing pages.
Well, you know, I've got to say this now. Ladies and gentlemen, we've often spoke about this. I mean, and, you know, Tommy Robinson, Kevin Carroll would always say to you, you know, when we talk about the Quran, we talk about Islam, we talk about the Hadith and that. And, you know, we all say, you know, before you sort of condemn something, read it first of all. Check what we say. You know, we don't want you to be misled by anything that we discuss on the show. We all say, have a Quran, read it. If you see what we see, and even get some Hadith to go with it as well, and some surahs, and you'll see exactly what we talk about. That Islam is very unhealthy for you.
Well, just remember, guys, is that I call my Quran weed because burning it's going to get me stoned.
Oh, he's on phone tonight, isn't he, Vlad?
He's on his game, that's for sure. So, listen, guys, a couple of quick news stories that I think really, if I may, that just need a bit of attention. Because I know that the show goes by so fast and some of these things. There's a video that I've been waiting for. It's been a long time in the making, a long time before they got it published. But it just went up today. The Q Society in Australia, a group that we should have in every country of the world, it's a fantastic group that exposes the lies of Islam and the dangers to the communities that it lives in. They just put up a video exposing all of the myths and facts about halal, the sort of scam of halal. Like, in other words, where the money goes, you know. It's much more than just how the food's slaughtered. It's a way of raising money for jihad. It's a way of making sure that there are Muslims involved in the food chain of any food anybody gets, and it's about how sneaky and pernicious it is. So I just pasted the link in the chat room, but it's also up on Vlad Tepes' blog. It's a few posts down. But the Q Society did a really excellent job, and they're doing some great campaigns. They're giving away, you know, those grocery bags that everybody tries to make you use now instead of the plastic ones. the sort of cloth ones that they want you to read. Well, they're giving away free grocery bags at all the grocery stores that have pamphlets about which foods are halal certified and which ones aren't. And it's got a big – you got to see the Q Society's campaign. It's just so courageous and so heartening to know somebody's got the guts.
It needs to be done, doesn't it, as well, Vlad? It's good to see brave and courageous people out there are stepping forward. And that's what we're seeing now. We are seeing more people standing, walking to the front now instead of sitting on the wall. Yeah, and well, that is, so we call them brave and courageous because, you know, because people do what we do. We're always open to attacks, this, that, and the other. Threat, you know, we've all said, I mean, if it's about threats of death against us, I mean, this is it. It goes on and on, doesn't it? But as I say, we continue to do as we do because the truth is the truth. And it always will be the truth, and people don't like that. It's just too bad. It's just the way things are. But yeah, thanks for that, Vlad. Thanks for posting that in the chat.
Well,
as well.
My pleasure. One more. I mean, I've got a bunch, but I'll stick with. I'll back down after this one next one because I think it's of tremendous importance, and it's that. Okay, here's the story. Thanks to just a handful, or perhaps more, but at least a handful of imams that were, you know, in Southeast Asia and the Middle East, who were preaching that the tuberculosis inoculation was actually a secret kufar plot to make women infertile. Oh, would that it was true. But because they were preaching that that's what it was, they were now seeing the biggest. Like, we thought TB had been basically wiped off the face of the earth. It was basically, we'd beaten it. That disease, no one sees tuberculosis anymore. There's no more. The original definition of sanitarium was actually a place where tuberculosis patients went to die, right? And they were all over the place, and it was a common
disease. I remember that when I was very young lad.
And we've basically, it's like one of the first diseases we've ever actually eradicated. And thanks to a few superstitious bearded morons, dangerous and pernicious and evil people who were planting a rumor, not because even these guys probably knew it wasn't true, but because they felt in some way it gave them some way to raise more hatred and suspicion of the kuffar, right? I don't know, whatever stupid reason they had. We're now seeing a resurgence of tuberculosis in Western countries, and just wait till the next Hajj is over, right? We're now starting to see this disease come back, and we're going to have to start manufacturing the vaccine in huge quantities again and inoculating all of our own people, all because of a bunch of these guys who just start passing. You know, we have to sequester Islam. We have to isolate it. We have to make sure it doesn't infect us, both literally and ideologically.
Yeah, actually, thank you for bringing that to the attention of the show and the chat room as well, and for our listeners, Vlad, because with these people, Sam, some of these people have not been inoculated before. We know it's going to be on a mass scale, and that's the trouble with tuberculosis, isn't it? People stay away because of suspicion that the women could become infertile, blah blah blah, and they'd rather believe that these people are telling them. But in the end, it looked like that we'd have one of these mass epidemics spreading like it did before. And then there'll be loads and loads of it. You know, it'll have to be done anyway. They'll have to be inoculated or be treated because there's going to be thousands of people dead with tuberculosis, isn't it, lads? So,
well, the only good news, I guess, is
ignorance of people.
The only good news, I guess, is it shows that Darwin, at the end of the day, Darwin's going to be right, right? Like, I mean, those of us that believe in microbiology, in science, and in reason, are going to inoculate ourselves, and we will be okay. And all of those people that are screaming about how it's a plot, and they don't believe in it, and they're just going to die, or they're going to be extremely sick. So I guess at the end of the day, this is a kind of suicide. I mean, I can see how this is, you know, likely. The question, I mean, I've never doubted that Islam will burn itself out and will fail at some point, right? The question isn't that. The question is, how much damage are we ready to take till that happens on its own? And I, for one, I'm not ready to take any damage. I think we should stand up and fight it way before it does. It's already doing countless, incalculable damage.
I agree.
If I
agree 100%.
Quickly interrupt, We've got we're going to have four callers soon. I know Andrew Macy's going to be calling in, so we've already got three people with their hands raised. So shall we quickly do a roll call now and we can get to these callers?
That sounds great. Love to hear what these guys have to say.
Yes, please.
Okay, yeah. Then. Infidels, infidel, shun. There we go. Right then, we've got Jeff and myself, and as we work our way down the parade grounds here, we've got British News, which is our own army.
Yeah,
the hair's looking a bit long, maybe a bit UAF long. Get it cut. Take this man's name, Jeff. We've got our Tim Burton, our own cat strangler, and our trainee violin player. Who will be leading our marching band as soon as we get that sorted. But until then, I have a cat, and my cat's here right now, and I don't want you strangling her. Take this man's name, Jeff.
Got it.
And we've got our Drake Strum. Yeah, he's
looking, hey, Drake.
Looking quite patriotic for a change.
Very good.
We've got Jacko.
Hey, Jacko.
Oh, Jacko, I've kind of missed the last episode of Geordie Shaw, so can you just tell me what happened? What do you mean it's not on anymore? Take his name, Jeff. I won't have insolence on my parade.
There you go. Cut it.
We've got EVF Newsfeed, which is our Alex. Oh God, you stink of Stella. Oh, my God. What are you going to do if the revolution starts tonight? Take his name, Jeff, and also get him some black coffee. ASAP. We've got quite a lot of guests in the room, so welcome to our guests. We've got Gulf Dogs.
Yay, Gulf Dogs. Yay.
Yeah, you're looking very nice there, mate. Holger Awakens. Now, we'll leave Holger up for our uniform inspection, because I ain't got a bad word to say about him. And because I can't have a bad word to say about Holger, take his name, Jeff.
I put one of my gold things on. There you go.
We got Jim Bamford.
Hey, Jim. Good to see you, boy. Good to hear you. Good to see you there. This radio, guys. It's not TV.
And we've got our immaculate soldier, Poppy, who leads our elite Bradford Liberation Team.
Here is
a soldier, guys. Look at her. Boots freshly polished, hair tied back, makeup not too slutty. Take her name, Jeff, and put a stick and a smiley face next to it.
Yeah, I put Gold Star there. There you go.
And now we move on to our kennels with our red fox. Unleash the beast. We're taking her to Tower Hamlet. All right, Gail, calm down, calm down. Go, calm down.
Infidels are watching.
We've got Ream Soldier.
Smart.
Well, he's not sent me any tweets today, actually. Take his name, Jeff.
Okay.
Oh, and there we go. Looking like a bloody UAF SWP supporter. Sat down with his legs crossed. Dreadlocks. What would Wayman Bennett do t-shirt? What is that? What does that wristband say? What would Allah do? Now, I believe we've had this problem before. Why do we keep letting back into our parade? I'll never know.
Is that Richard? Are you having to go at Richard again, Tom?
It's Richard Millington, guys.
Yes, I know.
You're grounded from Tower Hamlets until you get yourself off. Take this man's name, Jeff. And I do apologise, Paul, because, my chat, my list just keep flickering a bit, so you've only just popped up now. But, you look okay. I'll miss you out. You can be our little bit of royalty for the evening.
There you go.
So take his name, Jeff, just in case I've missed anything. And we've got Stranger73.
Oh, Stanger. Yay, Stanger. Good to see you, brother.
And we've got Mamma Mia No Sharia,
Vito Esposito. Mamma Mia No Sharia. Good to see you back.
And, of course, we've got our Vlad, who's on with us now, and you can find Vlad's blog.
Vlad. It's always a great pleasure having you on the show.
Let me try and get it right. Vlad Tepes at blogspot.com.
No.
That's it.
Just VladTepesBlog.com.
There you go, guys.
Just VladTepesBlog.com. Yeah, not Blogspot, no.
Oh, no, hold on a second. Can we take Vito Esposito's name? Because he kept trying to get me to say Anna. Oh, bollocks.
It's a good thing calling him last night. Well, Vito,
it was a pleasure to call last night. That was great. And we've also got Sue from New Mexico.
Oh, Sue from New Mexico. God bless you. She's, listens to every, I don't think she'd miss the show. She's, supports us, been supporting us all the time. God bless you, Sue. Continue great work that you do. I know she works very, very hard in the background, Tom. So, yeah, there you go.
And that's everyone we've got. So,
I'd like to thank you all for being here tonight. As I say, it's always great to see a busy chat room, Tom. It's always good to see a lot of our dear friends is in the chat room as well that supports the show and supports what we do within the English Defence League. God bless you guys. And for all our listening audience out there, if there wasn't you, there wouldn't be us. So thank you for your continued support for the show. With that, Tom, as I say, we're getting into the last segments of our show. So should we bring one of our first callers on, shall we?
Yeah, we'll get a little panel going here, won't we?
That's what we like, don't we, Tom? So let me bring in... Cat Strain, of course, is very own Mr. Tim Burton. Welcome to the East Anglia's EDO Radio Show, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, guys. Nice to speak to you all. Don't worry about your cat, Tommy. I've no plans on strangling your cat tonight.
Stand to attention when addressing an officer.
Ah, yes, sorry about that. Oh, my God. I've forgotten to do the buttons up on my uniform as well. So that's,
he has an old Jeff.
Yes, quick, your flies are undone, Tim.
Good job you told me about that, Jeff. Could have been really embarrassing there for a moment, especially on road though.
Jeff, just take Cat Strangler's name and put a tick down for each button.
Oh, dear. I can see I'm going to be in trouble here.
Anyway, it's good to have you call in on the show this evening. As we got flat. If you've got busy studio tonight, and so a lot of people were calling in tonight, and it's really good to see. But Tim, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully we'll have you on one of our future shows again, because it was really an insight, and different things we discussed, and we really opened the door on different things and the Islamic issues and that, didn't we, that night? So
yeah,
good to have you back, Tim.
I really enjoyed it when I was on there, and the time went past in a real flash. Hopefully I didn't put all your listeners to sleep.
They love you.
Once I get started, you know, I sometimes have a little trouble stopping and letting other people jump in. But the reason I wanted to put a few words in tonight was Vlad was talking about tuberculosis, I think, a few moments ago. And I read something this week about... the MERS virus. Now, for anybody who doesn't know, the MERS virus is Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome virus that's made a significant impact in the Middle East in recent weeks and months. And it's particularly important for two reasons. One, it's got a very high fatality rate of the cases that have been presented in the Middle East so far. I think there's a 50% mortality rate, which is, for a new virus, that's actually quite high. Now, I'm not a medical specialist, but if you compare it with the big panic that they had over the SARS virus that I think originated in China not all that long ago, it seems to me that nobody seems to be taking quite the same notice of the MERS virus as they are the SARS virus, and yet the implications are far, far worse in terms of what could possibly happen if you take that 50% mortality rate and found a way of propagating it around the world. You could very quickly...
You could have a pandemic.
Yeah, That's right. And you were talking about tuberculosis a little while ago. Well, yeah, I mean, tuberculosis is a serious disease. There's no doubt about that. But if you took something like the MERS virus and had the mechanism of spreading it around the world rapidly in a short period of time, you could have a major health problem on your hands. Now, the reason I'm mentioning it is nobody seems to be at all inclined to treat it as seriously, from what I can gather, as they would have done the SARS virus in about 8-9 years ago, I think it was. And because you've got a large amount of people coming to the Middle East, Muslims coming to the Middle East for the Hajj pilgrimage, I'm not sure exactly when that not sure exactly when that's likely to take place, but we're looking at a large number of people who are coming together in a place where, shall we say, it's likely to be less than hygienic conditions, if
exactly.
to be polite. The circumstances seem to be ripe for the spread of a virus such as the MERS virus. And what's going to happen when all those pilgrims leave the Hajj and go back to wherever in the world they came from, maybe incubating the disease and passing it on? If you've got something that's currently, when the symptoms develop in somebody, at that point you can expect a 50% mortality rate. That seems to me to be great cause for concern, and yet we don't seem to hear anything as much in the media about it, in the mainstream media I'm talking about, as we did when we had the SARS virus. And the SARS,
it was a very serious... I'm a bit like you. I'm very surprised because, you know, the implications behind if that got hold, if you say the mortality rate is 50%. Now, that is a very frightening scenario. Maybe they, because we had, you know, there was a bit of a panic because of the bird flu, the swine flu, and this, that, and the other.
Foot and mouth.
Sorry, Tom?
It was foot and mouth that time, weren't they? That was a few years ago.
but what I'm talking, you know, the diseases, I mean, but at the time, the world was awakened by this horrific pandemic, which killed millions, wasn't it? 1914 or something, right, when there was another mass pandemic. But this
Spanish flu.
Spanish flu. That was 1918, wasn't it? 1918, that was.
Right after World War One, yeah,
the
Spanish flu.
But
maybe that's what they're trying to do. Maybe not to put the panic up too much. But I think they should really be looking into this quite seriously. The World Health organisations who's involved in these diseases should be really taking very close concerns of what's going on there, because as you said, it's got a mortality rate of 50%, and that is... you can't just push that under the carpet.
I don't wish to push the religious aspect of this too much, because it's a disease, and if somebody catches it, it doesn't matter what religion you are. But just imagine that if a disease like that had sprung up in, let's say, the Vatican City, the first thing that the Pope and all the cardinals and the heads of the Catholic Church would do would be to say, well, hold on, anybody who's thinking of a pilgrimage to the Vatican City, how about holding back for a year, maybe two, until the World Health Organization have got a handle on it, and then we can see where we are, so we don't run the risk of infecting large numbers of our countrymen or our brethren worldwide. We don't seem to have any kind of approach like that from the Saudi authorities.
No.
They've got an upcoming pilgrimage with the Hajj, and you'd think that in those circumstances they'd be saying, well, maybe it would be a good idea to not just dissuade people from coming. I think the message they're putting out is people should take care not to catch the disease, or some useful bit of information like that. It would be preferable, one would have thought, to say, well, maybe we'll put off having this pilgrimage for a year or two, or for however long it takes for the World Health Organization to get a clear idea of what's happening and how to control it. We don't seem to see anything like that at all. Or if we have, I'm certainly not aware of it myself. I'm happy to be corrected if somebody tells me different, but that's my understanding.
Very, I think it boils down to the...
Say, Tim, a very good point there. Go ahead, Vlad.
Well, it's about the Inshallah, you know, culture of... There's a sort of a convenient... They have this... Islam has this conveniently applied philosophy of it's all Allah's will, right? It's very fatalistic on the one hand, but very militaristic on the other. So on the one hand, with things like this, they typically say, well, if I was meant to get sick, if it's Allah's will that I get this disease, you know, then I will. But strangely, they don't apply that to, like, letting other people live in peace.
Well, right? Absolutely. And I suppose it could be argued that if they've got a disease capable of causing a pandemic like this in their midst, if it kills tens of millions of the kuffar, that could actually be a good thing as far as they're concerned.
I would like
to think they're not that callous, but I'm not holding my breath, to be quite honest. I think they are that callous.
Well, if tuberculosis actually comes back, then hold your breath as long as you can. But if you go back to what the various imams said in moderate Indonesia when the tsunami hit, whatever, a few years ago now, on Christmas, I think it was, Christmas or Christmas Eve a few years ago, when the tsunami hit, all of the imams were saying that this is punishment for us not being aggressive enough with the kuffar. And, you know, we haven't done enough jihad. We haven't been harsh enough to the unbeliever. And this is Allah's punishment to the faithful, this tsunami. So, you know, you're not being callous or harsh when you're saying that might be their attitude. And to twig back to something that Jeff was saying earlier in the show about whether chemical weapons use, you know, there was a documentary done many years ago now that was actually staggeringly good and way underwatched. And it was about how A.Q. Khan had developed nuclear weapons for Pakistan, and then set up a kind of a nuclear weapons Walmart business where he's responsible for the largest proliferation of nuclear weapons of all time. And he, in that same documentary, they show Osama bin Laden holding a piece of paper with a fatwa written on it that he got from an indisputable authority in Sunni Islam, saying that absolutely, it was completely okay to use nukes on unbelievers, that it was completely it's completely halal and within Islamic law. So no, I don't think you are being overly cynical or overly harsh when you say that they would see that as being not only a good thing, but very, since it's disease that they don't understand, they would see it very much as being Allah's will that this happened. You know, let's just hope that all of us keep up with our shots. There is such a thing as herd immunity.
Good point at that. That's a good point there, Vlad. You know, because as you say, sometimes these people be thinking that if it causes the kuffar to fall like flies, then that would benefit their cause. And even if they pay with their own lives, as far as I'm concerned, if it's Allah's will, it's Allah's will, isn't it?
What I was going to say, infidels, is I've just had a song request. So is it uploaded yet?
Before we do, Tom, we have got another caller that's been hanging on for a little while who wants to come in. So I wonder if we can do this because this is a great. We've got a great panel tonight. We've got some great. As I've got Tim Burton, Cat Strangler, and we've got Vlad Trepez, and we've got myself. We've got Tom. So it should be interesting. It's nice to do this because we've got all different views of these the issues that we're discussing tonight. So maybe we'll bring the other call because he's been waiting a little while. So should I bring this caller in, guys? Yeah.
Yeah, please. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, call me. Hey. You live on the East Anglia's EDL radio show. EDL radio show. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Hello,
I'm yelling to white. Fuck white people. I fucking hate them all.
Try.
Oh, my goodness me.
Hey, we have a UAF in the room.
Was that what I think it was? Was the words to that song, I fucking hate white people?
Yep. That's
well,
why
you know,
very
I suggest that person, you know, get down to the airport, and there's some really wonderful countries he can live in where he won't have to deal with them at all. Liberia.
Yeah, Syria's good this time of year.
Oh, they're pretty pale in Syria. I think Liberia, Liberia is a perfect place for him because if he knows anything about anything, Liberia is a country in Africa that was restarted, if you want, by ex-American slaves. I should say they weren't slaves, their ancestors were slaves. And it was the 1940s or 1950s, they rose up and said, we've had enough of white racism, we've had enough, we're going to go back to our roots in Africa and start paradise. And they did. And Liberia, well, if anybody wants to know, it's one of the best documentaries you will ever see in your life. Go on YouTube and look for the Vice Guide to Travel to Liberia. It's a four-part one. I absolutely promise you, the minute you hit play in the first one, you won't stop watching till you get to the end of the fourth one. It is that. I mean, I know all of us, our time is limited, but that is stellar. And that listener, I think he should get right down to Liberia and start to enjoy the paradise of a place where there's basically no white people and that was started by a lot of black anti-racists and anti-fascists. Liberia, that's my suggestion to you, listener. Get on a plane. Liberia is only hours away and enjoy the rest of your life. Is anybody else waiting to get on?
Yeah.
No, that's everyone. But that was somebody of the Muslim Defense League, guys.
Oh, well, so now we
know. I hope you are listening, because what you've just heard is racist, so you're going to go oppose them now.
Oh, yeah.
Don't hold your breath.
Yes, I mean to say, we didn't do, now, I've got to admit, we've done a cold call there, basically. We like to screen people, but I just thought it was one of our regulars that could be calling in. So we've had our first troll. We haven't had a troll for a little while, have we, guys? So just one now and again. And
nothing could be better than when they expose their real agenda. I wish that we'd get dozens of those, right? Because you know why? Because when I, on my site now and again, the odd religious Muslim starts to post all kinds of stuff, and I just have to thank them because I could post 50 stories which are truthful and important about the nature of Islam and its interactions with the rest of the world. And it won't mean as much as when one of those guys opens their mouth in terms of educating the public as to what Islam is all about. So, you know, thank you for that, caller. That was terrific.
I was going to say, is it okay if I play this song? It's only 3 minutes long, but we've got time for it.
Yeah, was it? Yes, Tom, I was going to say, thanks once again, Tim, for calling in tonight, and Vlad, it's always great to have you on the show on a Friday, because there's so many things. As I say, perhaps we need a 3-hour show or something.
Oh God,
<Yeah.
laughs> maybe at Christmas.
That's a nice idea. I'd love to do a Christmas special. We should do a Christmas special with music. That'd be a lot of fun.
And before I play this song,
yep, I can bring my violin along and accompany you.
Yeah, that's
your
violin
that.
Along.
Yeah.
Before I play this song, I've just put something on my Facebook. I think you might enjoy. Let me dig it up. There we go. Glad you might not know what I'm talking about here, but if you don't, just ask and I'll explain it to you. I've just put this on my Facebook, guys. If there is one thing in my life I would love to see, it's for Philip Schofield to go to the Hajj pilgrimage and say, activate the cube.
Activate the cube.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. Good, though. Very good. Thank you for that, Tom.
All right.
Beautiful, isn't it, guys?
for American listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, Philip Schofield hosts a show called The Cube where people go and there's all sorts of tasks that have to happen.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Like a game show. Okay, good.
Yeah, it's a game show. But this song might take a while to load, but are we ready for it?
Okay,
here we go.
Forgive them, for they know not what they do. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. But the march of the tides is starting to change. Sacrifice on a summer's day. The slaughter of the meek came under the streets. Now nothing can ever be the same. No, nothing can ever be the same. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. There's a line in the sand no man can cross. The deserts are yielding to the sea. The oasis of salvation lies within our reach. The children of tomorrow hold the key. The children of tomorrow hold the key. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. When three kings from afar follow the star, 2,000 years ago this was the sign. Now the east winds blow, the people should know. This is the sign of our times. 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 This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. With the wolves at the door, I can't take anymore. This freedom is a heavy price to pay. The road to Damascus seems so far away. It's the battle for hearts and minds today. 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 This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade. This is not a crusade.
And of course that was by our Anglo-Saxon great tune. This is not a crusade. Thanks for that, Tom. I didn't know you could play that one.
Yeah. I absolutely love that tune. I really do, because what Allied forces are doing in Afghanistan and Iraq right now, it's not a crusade at all. The real crusade's happening right now in Tower Hamlets and Bradford and Birmingham and Luton. This is the second Muslim crusade.
Possibly the third.
Yeah, quite possibly
the third.
Yeah.
And of course, we've got to respond as what we've always done. But the trouble is because our politicians have allowed this scenario to take place. That when we used to go overseas and fight our wars over there, these have been brought to our doorstep. The enemies are in our midst, aren't they? The enemies are within. So,
living next door to them. We see them every day.
That's it. I know there's a saying, keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer, or something like that. But that's just going over the top, isn't it? But
in
but
that case,
my
Jeff, you're living on this side of the country, so you better move up closer so I can keep an eye on you. because you're my enemy.
But no, Tom. Once again, Tim, it's great you calling in tonight. As I say, I don't know how many issues we've been discussing tonight, but we've covered so many things.
I was listening a little earlier on, and I mean, there's no end of things which you could cover in a lot of detail. And I suppose if you wanted to do justice to a lot of these topics, you'd need a complete show for each topic. So it's always a compromise to what sort of depth you go into. But in addition to the MERS virus, which we were talking about before, which I think is a really important topic, because that is something that could seriously harm the world's population, you know, far more than a bombing campaign by Al Qaeda or you know, even another Twin Towers incident. The Twin Towers from 9/11 would pale into insignificance, you might say, compared to the consequences of a serious pandemic based on a virus where we may not even have time to develop a vaccine which is going to be fully effective to protect the majority of the population. That's really
scary.
And that's what frightens me, really, is that nobody seems to be treating it as seriously as they did with the SARS virus. When they had the SARS virus, it was discovered pretty much straight away that there was a high mortality rate with that. But very quickly, people were talking about putting travel restrictions in place in between, I don't know if it's the whole of China, but certainly the area of China where it was first discovered, and the rest of the world, so that we didn't get the possibility of it developing into a worldwide pandemic. And now, I'm reluctant to say this is just because we don't want to offend Muslims. You know, I cannot believe that people like the World Health Organization would be affected, would take that into account.
Okay, I got to stop you right there. Stop you right there. You remember how Obama appointed a chief of NASA whose main job it was to do Muslim outreach?
I do remember that. And so talking about taking a lot of money away from NASA and putting it towards making Muslims feel good about themselves.
Yes, based on fictitious history and nonsense rewritten revisionist versions of what contributions that people who might have been Muslim at one point might have done. I mean, it's just preposterous. So you have to look. When you're asking yourself questions like that, I'll try to make this as short as possible, because I actually do want you to continue with your point. But when you're asking yourself questions like this, you have to remember that Obama's intention was a policy shift to get rid of all conventional U.S. allies. That would be Canada and Great Britain and so on and so on. And I can give you unimpeachable evidence that that's what he was planning and that's what he did, even if it's the Cairo speech alone, the Cairo initiative alone, but also that he wanted to bring the United States close to the Islamic world and forge a very new geopolitical world. That was his intention. So when you say that you don't believe that that the CDC, for instance, would be that concerned about offending Muslims, well, I think it's actually no stretch of the imagination if you just allow yourself to see what Obama's policies have been so far, that in fact that would be exactly what it would be.
Well, if that turns out to be the case, then it's far, far more serious than we talk about preventing domestic terrorism. Well, quite apart from international terrorism, we have in the UK, we have what's called the government call a prevent strategy, which is to reduce radicalization of Muslims.
Oh, just to let you know, guys, we're literally down to 4 minutes.
Okay, I'll keep this short.
I was going to say,
I'll keep it short in that case. I was just going to say, in this country, we're doing our best to stop domestic terrorism, but that's really very small scale compared to what could happen if a pandemic got out of control. So, anybody who's listening here who's got any kind of influence at all in health matters should really be looking to make this into a huge, huge international issue, because I think it could become very serious very quickly. That's really all I want to say on this. I don't want to hog the rest of the time,
guys,
so I'll turn it over to you.
If we want to, Vlad and of course Mr. Tim Burton, if you want to, we can continue this over into the archives if you want, because there's some interesting issues you've been bringing up. But I've got to close down this part of the show to all the listeners and the guys in the chat room. So, guys, I don't know if you want to continue for a little while after.
I would like to know more and ask a few questions. Yeah.
I'll shoot, guys, when the show finishes.
Okay, Tommy. Well, thank you very much for doing all what you've done tonight, Tommy Slides, and your input and everything you do. To all our other listeners out there, God bless you all. And to everybody in the chat room this evening, thank you for being here, especially Sue from Mexico as well. God bless you. And I hope you'll be coming into the archives with us as well, Sue. So it should be very interesting. So with that, with myself, Jeff, a.k.a. No Surrender EDL, Tommy English, my co-host, we're going to go...
There's only one Tommy English.
Take care. Stay safe.
I love his modesty. Don't you guys? I love his modesty.
There you go.
There's only one Tim Best.
There you go. Anyway, we're going underground, guys, and we'll speak to you guys in a few minutes. Okay, here we go.
People might say my life is in a rut. Quite happy with what I got. People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can't see the point. Things happening here today, a show of strength with your boys brigade. I'm so happy and you're so fine. You want more money, of course I don't mind. My new deal of customers for Atomic Prime. That the public gets what the public wants, but I want nothing. Pleasure to hate me, I've been enough already on my fate. People might need some tension to relax me, I'm too busy dodging through the facts. To be here for what you get, you made your bed, you better lie in it. They choose your lead and the place you trust, and the lies will shut down and their promises come. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns, and the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give up, I am the one.
Go, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to the archives, we're having a little bit of archives this evening, and I'd say we've got our very own Mr. Tim Burton and Vlad Tepe, so it's always, it's always good to have you on the show on a Friday as well, Vlad. So
thanks very much.
Issues.
Always good to be here.
That's right. Thanks for coming. And of course, at this moment in time, and Sue sometimes, like, we've got Sue from Mexico, who's she's actually called in. She wanted to have a chat to you guys. So
fantastic.
I'll bring Sue in with us.
Yeah.
And we can discuss a few things. Welcome, Sue. Good to see you in the archive section this evening.
Good to see all of you guys too. Very interesting subject on the diseases that are coming. The United States has antibiotic resistant TB.
Terrific.
And,
and
the thing is concentrating, of course, on our southern borders, being brought in, from immigrants coming in there. But it's also concentrating up in the northeast part of the United States, getting close to Canada. And they're not putting it out. I'm a nurse, and I go to websites and stuff, and I'm always checking it out. But, there's some real serious stuff coming.
Yeah, I mean, having a defense against TB is one thing, because TB is something that we've had a lot of time to get used to, because it's a disease that's been around for ages. And although I'm sure there's been various mutations, generally speaking, people have been able, in the medical profession, have been able to develop good lines of resistance via antibiotics that can be fed to the general population. But what the point I was making a little earlier was, if we get something that's completely different, maybe significantly different from what we've seen before, that's got a 50% mortality rate, and it gets around the world very, very fast before anybody's had a chance to develop an antibiotic resistance that can be given to significant numbers of the population in time, we might be in for something far more serious than even the Spanish flu of 1918 that the guys were referring to when we first brought this subject up. Now, I don't know what you think about that. As I say, I'm not a medical professional, but I see parallels, and when I see parallels like that, the first thing I would like to do is ask whether I'm being unduly scaremongering or whether I have a valid point which the health authorities ought to be addressing when they're not.
Can I take a stab at this one?
Yeah, sure.
First of all, of course, with a virus, there's no antibiotics. Antibiotics only work on bacteria, right? So we can count out any sort of antibiotic treatment or cure for this. Now, the fact that there's an antibiotic resistant strain of TB, that's a huge problem. I'll come back to that later. But as far as this virus is concerned, it's a very, very different thing. Recently, there's been a couple of drugs that were developed that actually were sort of antibiotics for viruses, right? It's a new whole type of class of drugs. One of them is called Tamiflu, and it actually, for some, I don't know if it's all viruses or some viruses, but if you catch it early enough and you get a dose of Tamiflu, it could actually prevent you from developing the disease, providing you take it early enough for many types of virus, right? And it was considered, this particular drug was so important, this development of this drug, that governments treated it as an actual strategic resource and ordered just massive amounts of Tamiflu. And the condition was that it wasn't to be given to the public, it wasn't to be prescribed to the public unless there was some sort of pandemic that was going to be used to treat the population for exactly the kind of scenarios we're talking about, right? So what happened, of course, is tons of doctors went ahead and prescribed their patients Tamiflu who had bad flus and for whatever reason. And the consequence is that very likely a lot of viruses are now immune to that one. Now, I think there might be a second and maybe a third drug which actually acts in more or less the same fashion. But what I'm saying is that, there is kind of something we can do, and governments do have giant stockpiles of it, and it may or may not work, but at least there is something. We're not entirely going to be blindsided by this, right? And I wanted to ask you, do you know, what's the incubation period and how virulent is it, and what's the, how, if it's going to kill you, how fast does it do that? Do you happen to know?
No, I don't have those figures available. I'm sure I could find them out and post links where you need to know. But I don't have that at my fingertips. But obviously, that is a very important factor.
Because I mean,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I let you guys. The thing about these viruses and what the World Health Organization needs to do is they need to learn where the virus is living. You know, like one of the viruses they found it in chickens here in the United States. And I worked with Indian Health Services at the time. I don't know if you've heard of the Hunter virus.
Yes.
I haven't, but please carry on.
Yeah, it had over 50% mortality rate. And the funny thing was, it killed the young, not the old. And what they did is they found it to be living in the mice species. So there was a big program, you know, to go on all the reservations in New Mexico and stuff, lots of education. You know, if you was around mice species, you know, you wore a mask.
Well, yeah, that's a Central American mouse urine virus that was incredibly virulent, was it not? And that was people would get it was in the fields anywhere where mice lived. It was something contracted from the urine of mice, wasn't it?
No, the Hunter virus started on the Navajo reservation. I took care of some of the first patients, and I saw Olympic runner who was Navajo died. And it started on the Navajo reservation. That's where they traced that it was pretty much contained in the southeast part of the United States. And because off of the reservation they was coming into IHS, well, you know, they went looking because they could directly trace it to where it was coming. It took them about not quite a year to figure it out. But it was strictly, you know, more New Mexico and around all the Indian reservations. Very, very scary disease to watch young, healthy athletes, you know, die.
Yeah, we had something similar over in the UK recently. It was quite a scare for quite a while. I am going back about 20-odd years or so. I think it was called leptospirosis. And that was specifically from rat urine, which could be passed to humans. Now, I don't know if that's a related thing or if I'm completely off topic here, but I do recall that.
Yes. I mean, if you look back at the plague, the plague was scary. So what they
that's coming back too, by the way.
Bubonic plague, yes. I've heard something that there's been some talk about. Isn't there somewhere that it's been one of the countries that they've come across bubonic plague? I can't remember which.
I think that a 15-year-old boy died this summer of the bubonic plague. We still have occasional outbreaks of it, and it's usually they're up in the mountains somewhere.
I've got to admit, the discussion, I mean, with, it's good that you called in tonight, Tim, because it's something that, you know, the media's not reporting. There's a few little articles as such, isn't there? But they're not reporting. And we can see ourselves sitting on the little panel right with them, can see the serious implications of it could become like a pandemic. But I've just got to, before we sort of maybe just move on a little bit, I was going to say to Vlad, you know, this Tim Burton, he wrote actually an essay on in defense of the English Defence League, and as he was on one of our previous shows before, so I just wanted to, because I didn't properly introduce you properly, guys.
I'm pretty sure I posted that with a link back to my own site.
Thank you very much. Okay.
It was a few days ago, I think, right?
I wrote the essay a couple of months ago. I posted it on New English Review in June, and it's still there. If you want to look in the featured articles, you can still find it. But it's something that if you would like to discuss at some point in the future, not necessarily now. I'd be very happy to sort of field questions on it. But coming back to the MERS virus, yeah, I think the opportunity to bring that up and discuss it is of extreme importance, because if it does turn out to be a pandemic that's anywhere near as virulent as the Spanish flu was in 1918, and we're hamstrung because of political correctness from taking the appropriate steps to deal with it in good time, then that is nothing short of a crime against humanity.
Well said.
While there may well be other equally virulent diseases out there, because they're not specifically associated with the Middle East, I have the impression that the health authorities wouldn't worry too much about the steps that need to be taken. I'm sure they'd take all the appropriate steps with things like that. But if there's something that implies that Muslims or the Middle East or countries in the Middle East are specifically responsible for propagating the disease when they should really be taking steps to counter it, if the health authorities are too scared to stand up, or as Vlad says, if there are specific policies coming out of the Obama administration to remake the world's geopolitical order, and that's just falls in nicely with their strategy, that is nothing short of a crime against humanity, and everybody should be shouting it from the rooftops.
Well, absolutely.
I agree. I'm nodding my head, totally in agreement with
the problem is there's so many of those today, that there's so many things that have happened in the last 10, 12, 14 years, especially in the last 6 or 7 years or 8 years, that are so catastrophically wrong that we would all be on all the roofs just would have all collapsed by now.
Yes, for all the people standing on the rooftop shouting. Well, yeah, I agree, and to a certain extent, we are becoming desensitized about the things that are coming out from the Middle East, things that you hear about that are so horrific that if they were taking place in any other part of the world where there is what passes for civilization, we would be all rightly outraged and disgusted. People would even be writing to the Guardian about it, saying this is just not on in
actually,
a civilized society.
We're so desensitized
about, what do we have? Just recently, a video of a Syrian rebel cutting the heart out of one of his enemies and eating it for whatever reason.
Yeah, I spoke about this last night, Tim.
That's right. Yes, you did. But I mean, the point is that these things, all right, somebody does something like that, and we all say, "Oh, that's just terrible." They only affect a small number of people. There's the guy who had his heart eaten. Obviously, he wouldn't have been too happy about that. But maybe his immediate family and his friends and colleagues and so on. But if you get something like a pandemic and there's any kind of political correctness or any kind of multicultural effect that gets in the way of proper treatment, even to the point where we're too scared to quarantine people who've been in these locations and evaluate whether or not they pose a danger.
It's racist to quarantine a guy because he's sick.
Just because he's sick, just because he's come from the Middle East and he's a Muslim, you can't quarantine him because that would be racist. Now, that is just crazy. That is the point at which we should be saying, no matter what has happened before and how desensitized we may have become to things coming out of the Middle East, that is the red line where we've really got to say, if we don't do something, we're going to endanger a significant number of people in the world, and political correctness be damned, we have to deal with it properly.
Now, this was called the MERS, right? MERS virus.
Yeah. MERS. That's correct. Yes.
And it stands for Middle Eastern
Respiratory Syndrome. Yes.
The other problem too is trying to contain it in any Islamic country.
Well, yeah. This was precisely the point I was making earlier. That if we get something like the Hajj taking place where millions of Muslims converge on an infected area and then take that disease away and spread it around the world, the containment problem is going to be enormous. And nobody seems to be taking the appropriate steps.
2 days ago, a UN worker was killed, I believe it was in somewhere in Africa where the Islamists are in control. So if you can imagine anybody trying to go into these countries and contain it, you know, the chances of them, like, drinking from a cup of water, you know, a Muslim had drunk from, and that's blasphemy.
Yeah, Pakistan.
Yeah. Well, of course,
as we said before, Tim and Vlad, political correctness is being can be a downfall for, you know, humanity. You know, because if you think that because they're scared of offending these people about this situation they got and trying to keep it under low key, and we could have a pandemic break out. You know, that, as you said, this could be crimes against humanity. We've got to sweep away political correctness where it comes to the world, you know, the world's nations with a serious disease such as that, which, as you said, has got a mortality rate of 50%. That is massive, that is. You know, that is very scary. And if people like yourself who are making, I hope there are people that's listening in to the show this evening, listening to the archives, and get to grips with it a little bit and try to put away this political correctness on these issues. Because it is so, so important what we've been discussing tonight, isn't it, guys?
Well, quite honestly, I can't think of anything at the moment that's more important than this if it were allowed to get hold to the point where it became a global pandemic. Now, I'd be very happy for somebody from the World Health Organization or CDC, is it, Vlad, that you mentioned?
Yes.
Is it CDC? I'd be very happy from somebody in a position of authority from one of those organizations to say, well, actually, you're scaremongering because we actually have it all under control. And if they were to list the salient points and address them to everybody's satisfaction, nobody would be happier than me. I'd be very happy to be proved wrong. However, from the limited research I have done, I don't think that's happening. And if I am right, this has got the potential to be of far more catastrophic effect than anything that we might expect in the way of Al-Qaeda bombing campaigns or anything similar, which, you know, they're limited geographically in what they can do even with a powerful bomb. But with something like a pandemic, you can kill tens of millions of people in a very short time. And if we don't have the defences in place to stop that happening, then things like bombings, like even 9/11, pale into insignificance. And yet, we're still dancing around it, it seems to me, because of political correctness. And somebody somewhere should be saying, all right, we have become desensitized to things that are happening in the Middle East, but this is too important to sweep under the carpet and to treat in the same way.
Yeah. It is, because at this moment we stand, though, it's the political willingness and for people to put things aside, to put political correctness aside, and to sort out, the as you say, this is a very serious... I'm glad you brought this point up tonight, Tim. You know, we're giving it plenty of airtime tonight. Maybe we can discuss it on future shows, because it's only right that with something as, you could say, mortality rate like the MERS, is what's been talked about tonight, that if it did get a grip, it could be absolutely devastating for the world. You know, if we look at it in that sense, not just... What was it in the 1918? It killed millions, didn't it?
I think it was even tens of millions we're talking about.
We're talking about the Spanish flu. Spanish flu actually took out a measurable fraction of the Earth's population. It was unbelievably, unbelievably devastating.
I think we are talking tens of millions, certainly, if not, well, all right, I don't have exact figures, but it was certainly more than millions from my understanding. And yes, it seemed to me that the MERS virus has the potential to do exactly the same, if not worse. I'd say I'm very happy to be proved wrong. And I would like to hear from somebody with a little bit more medical knowledge than I have, who could maybe address some of the points that I've spoken about, and maybe throw a little bit of extra light on them, on some of the
500 million people.
500 million. Amazing number. Thank you, Vlad, for
500 million contracted the disease, 50 to 100 million died.
So we're looking about a 20% mortality rate. And here we're dealing with something, all right, I know the sample is smaller, so although we've got a 50% mortality rate in a small sample, if that mortality rate were transposed to a Europe-wide or even a worldwide population, you could be talking not just hundreds of millions of people. You could be talking billions of people who might die. And you know, for political correctness, and there is a point where you've got to say, political correctness be damned. Let's do what's necessary. I'd be very happy to be proved wrong on this. Jumps out to me.
It'd be nice if, you know, I might ask around, actually, see if we could get someone who's involved in these diseases. Maybe we could get someone on the show. We could have, maybe we'll have a show, an hour show or something.
Actually,
our show.
It doesn't look that viral. It doesn't look that virulent. The impression I'm getting is transmission air to air, person to person, is very low. It's not airborne. It looks like it's spread by some kind of bat that doesn't live here. I'm just looking it up in the Wikipedia. It's called Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus. I'll put the link. I just left it.
Oh, thank you.
I'll look in medical journals, and if I find anything, I will send it to Tommy.
Okay. If we're not looking at person-to-person contact being quite so contagious, that's one thing, but certainly from the limited research I did, the extent of the person-to-person contact compared to the animal-to-person contact, that there were those comparisons to be had. But I believe that it came originally from goats and camels. I mean, how on earth that could possibly have jumped to humans in the Middle East, I just cannot imagine. This is a family show, and we don't
think it won't be too graphic, but we do know they've got some weird interests with their animals. We won't go into too many details, but I think most of us have knows about Islam and knows about what goes on within some of these countries. It's not surprising.
I suppose, leaving apart the exact means of transmission, the point is that if it can jump between animals and humans, then presumably it can jump from human to human with some sort of contact. And even if you rule out air-to-air contact...
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I have to correct myself. I read the first part of the history, which said February 13, 2013, the risk of sustained person-to-person transmission appears to be very low. And then 29 May, now we're getting a bit of 2013, the World Health Organization is now warning that MERS virus is a threat to the entire world.
That's in a very short space of time. I mean, this is the point that I was making, is that sometimes you can get a pandemic which springs up, well, I won't say out of nowhere, because it obviously comes from somewhere, and genetic mutations can take place during the process of it becoming a pandemic, to the point where it becomes very difficult to develop any kind of vaccine which is going to be effective. And if it travels around the world before effective vaccines have been dispersed to the general population, then I can well see how that might become a threat to the world. And how we tackle that is going to be, it'll have to
be a massive. I would think if it happened like that, Tim, it'd be a massive loss before they found an antidote to it, if that was the case. But we're just speculating, aren't we, at this moment in time?
Yeah, but I mean, it's most interesting that Vlad's compared those two articles, and he said in the first one, it didn't look like it was going to be that serious, and then in a very short space of time, the World Health Organization is saying, well, hang on a minute, this could actually be a threat to the population of the world.
And they said it is, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Well, not it could be, it is. And yet,
so there you go.
That would be a signal to every responsible authority in every country in the world to say, well, let's just stop travel to and in from the infected areas until we've got a hold of this. And that just, you'd think that would be the very first thing that would happen. When you're in a hole, you stop digging. And if they've got that far where they can say it is that kind of a threat of that magnitude, why have we not had worldwide controls on travel? Or if we have, I haven't heard about them. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm always happy for that. But I'm seeing all these red flags and nobody in authority seems to be doing much about it.
No, which is... it's so wrong that they should be getting their act together very, very quick. As you say, these two articles, one said it doesn't spread, and then in the next month or 2 months down the line, it said that this could be a world problem. So it just goes to show you that everybody that's concerned with anybody in authority should be really taking notes, should be getting the scientists involved with what's going on, because we don't really know where this is going to go, how long it's going to take before we see the first signs of it in our own countries, and that's a worrying part. But anyway,
I would have thought the prudent thing to do for anybody in authority who has any kind of measure of control over these things would be to assume the worst, assume that it could spread in the way I've described, and put some controls in place until such time as it becomes obvious that, in fact, those controls are maybe a sledgehammer to crack a nut, and you can ease off with those controls. But the consequences of not putting those controls in the first place, it seems to me, is just asking for the problem to become an out-of-control problem in no time at all.
Okay, can I just put another spin on this, like a completely different angle? Mm-hmm. All right, this is a little bit unusual. Are we off the air now? Like, are we broadcast? What's our status?
We're still in the archives, Vlad. We're still broadcasting at the moment.
Oh, okay. Well, what the heck. All right, so, over the past, I don't know, 30 years, there's been a number of fake global catastrophes, right? There's been, global warming, nuclear winter, acid rain, killer bees. I could go on. Actually, I kept a list of them somewhere. But there's been in my lifetime alone, every few years, there's been some utterly, completely, utter hokum, global, world-ending. I personally have a theory about it. I don't want to take too much time on this, but just for your amusement, my personal theory is that it's what I call the secular version of Revelations, right? You have sinful humanity. You have a sinful man, which is bringing the end of the world upon himself because of his bad deeds, whether it's being a capitalist in industry or whether it's mistreatment of the Mother Earth, the planet, or whether it's, burning fossil fuels and letting... So I kind of see a secular version of Revelations in all of these global catastrophes that every 5 or 10 years they come up with a new one, and people keep buying into it, right? However, during this period of time, there have been one or two really serious things that have come up and don't get talked about. And there, for example, there's one called sheep dip. Now, I don't remember all the details, but if you look it up, you should find it. Sheep dip, SHEEP DIP. Sheep dip was a disease that had the potential to just be unbelievably, especially I think it was in England, it had the potential to cause incredible devastation, and the government completely kept it hushed up,
right? They get, because it was an actual real potential horror that of a large scale. Whereas Mad Cow, for instance, is another one, which, to the best of my knowledge, there is no way a prion can be gotten by eating it. Right? It's not even a pathogen. A prion that causes Yakov-Creutzfeldt disease or spongiform encephalopathy, that doesn't happen from eating something that has it, because it's just a folded a protein that's folded wrong. You don't. It's not like a virus or a bacteria that re-engineers your cells to work for it. It's like this other thing. And like that was also nonsense, right? There's all these end-of-the-world disasters that just don't happen. But then the ones that really are serious and really could, those are the ones that you don't hear about. So that's just another angle on this whole thing. But I'm certainly going to do a lot more research on MERS. This sounds both interesting and very important. And Tim, is it?
Yeah.
I just want to thank you very much for bringing my attention to it, because this is something that I'm definitely going to take a little bit of time here and there. And,
well, you and me too. I mean, I've got I won't say I've got links to the health profession as such, because that sounds a little bit pretentious, but I do know one or two people in the health profession that I've been emailing while we've been talking, and there's a very nice lady in Washington by the name of Michelle who's been feeding me a few relevant links as we've been talking, and it's certainly something I'm going to be doing some research on as well. So
I was going to say, guys, maybe we could do this again, and maybe if you've done some, you know, some digging around and that, maybe we can do another part of the show where we can discuss it, because it's been. I've got to thank Tim for bringing that information onto the show this evening, because we've really we've looked into it, and we still can do some more exploring. And And if I know you yourself, Tim, and I know Vlad will be checking it out. So maybe we do another show where we can explore some of the things that we've found out.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have to sign off. But Jeff, thanks, man. It's always good hanging out with you on Fridays. I'll see everybody hopefully this week, right?
Yeah, good meeting with
thank
you, Vlad.
Thank you so much.
Stay in touch.
Thank you, Vlad. For being here tonight. It's been, what can I say, it's been a fantastic show this evening. And also I've got to thank you, Tim, Mr. Tim Burton, for being on the show this evening. Vlad's just dropped off. And of course, good night, Vlad, because he's probably shoot off on that. But of course, Super Mexico, thank you for your input as well on the show this evening. As I say, it's been really interesting tonight. So I've got to thank you both so much for tonight, for being here in the archives. We've gone over a little bit. And Tim, come back again soon. See you.
Yes, indeed.
It's been a great show this evening.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll say cheerio to all your listeners now, especially Sue in Mexico. Good to talk to you, Sue. And, of course, Tommy and yourself. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Yeah, great, Tim. And as I say, yeah, come back soon. We'll speak in Skype, Tim, and can't wait to welcome you back again. Please call in again any time. It's great. Fantastic. and so your final words for the evening?
Yeah, I do. Kerry came out and Obama, they are going to go into Syria alone. And our Congress is not going to come back like your parliament did, mainly because they don't want their votes on the record because we have an upcoming election. So now it's just a matter of time when they do it. But that they came, Kerry made a speech, and then Obama came out for a few minutes, and that's what they said. And they had a teleconference last night with a few of the top in Congress, but it wasn't Obama. It was one of his aides or something. And from what I've seen on the news today, the U.S. is going to strike Syria. So please say a prayer for our troops in Israel, and it's not going to be good.
No, that's absolutely appalling. I mean, I had an inkling that he was going to go ahead with it from news I heard earlier on the day, but it just seems absolutely crazy because there's no overall goal for regime change, and we don't even know who it was that set the chemical attacks off. But I won't get into that now. I'll do as you say, Sue. I'll say a little prayer for... Well, certainly for all the American troops who might end up getting involved in this.
I won't
take up too
well.
Much time. And I'll just say thanks for saying that, Sue. And my thoughts are with them in the same way that yours are.
Thank you.
Yeah, well said, Tim. Tim and Sue, do you know what I'm going to do, guys? It just so happens that as we've been talking... I've got Alex in the Bandits, and it's called Road to Damascus. I was wondering, while we was discussing Syria, whether we should just end the show on the Alex and the Bandits Road to Damascus. But Sue, as I say, my thoughts and prayers go with all the boys and girls that's serving out in Afghanistan. Whether US is going to go for strikes in Syria. Well, my thoughts and prayers always go out to the boys and girls that's involved with any military conflict that we might be involved in. So, we'll be praying for all you guys, because it does seem like if Obama goes ahead, he's confronting the Russians. The Russians, basically, it could be scary times ahead, but let's hope that common sense once again prevails. Let's just hope for that. So, once again, I've got to thank you both. I've got to thank all of our listeners. I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. We've discussed so many things tonight, haven't we, Sue? And Tim and, yes. And Vlad and Tommy. And then we had another troll, didn't we, come in? We had a troll come in as well. So it was an interesting evening. But I've got to say, God bless you too. Take care. And I'll speak to you too, Tim.
Yep.
I've got another show this Sunday. So I'll be listening in. Sue, I know you always do. Thank you so much for all your support. And I'm going to say goodnight to you both. And we'll play this tune out and this into. So my thoughts and prayers go all to our serving souls and military. Wherever you might be. I know that some do listen to the show, believe it or not. So if you're listening, guys, God bless you. We're thinking of you. Stay safe. And anyway, good night, guys. This is...
Yeah, good night. Good night. Speak to you soon.
Good night, guys. Road to Damascus.
I found a freedom on the open road to Damascus. Oh, wait.
The Lion!
And on I'm
Well, there you go. That was Road to Damascus by Alex and the Bandits. Sue, I'll see you again this Sunday. God bless you. Thank you for listening to the show and participating in the show as well this evening. Good night, Sue.
Oh, good night.
Good night. And I've got to give a shout out to all our listeners. Don't forget, guys, BDL, no surrender, no surrender ever. Good night, guys.